morning. Thank you for the introduction and the invitation. I would like to start this presentation by describing Cal Poly. Maybe some of you were wondering about that. So Cal Poly is located, it's a polytechnic university, and it's located in the Central Coast in San Luis Obispo, around here. It has a very unique microclimate because we get the morning fog from the ocean. And then in the afternoons, we have cool weather and very colorful, you know, sunsets. And this is a perfect environment for the production of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And I fell in love with this place, and certainly it's perfect to enjoy a glass of wine once in a while. Okay, with that, the animal science department, the philosophy is learning by doing. It's an undergraduate focused education. The cattle operation has 4,500 acres of grazing land. We run around 300 head of commercial and purebred black Angus cows. We also have a student-run bull test. Around 130 bulls are put into the test every year. And last but not least, we have a dairy, the last dairy in the Central Coast. We have 100 registered Holsteins and also 100 registered cute jerseys. Okay, so with that, this is going to be the map of the presentation. I'm going to overlap in some areas with what Pablo discussed earlier. So we're going to talk about genotyping embryos, but that involves many different disciplines, embryology, molecular biology, and so forth. So I'm going to try to quickly go through the in vitro embryo production system, pre-implantation, genetic diagnosis, how we amplify that little piece of cell sample that we get from the embryo. Then we need to freeze these embryos because the answer is not going to be back in a couple of weeks. So we need to cryopreserve the embryos. And finally, I am going to show you some experiments that we have done. And again, we haven't reinvented the wheel. It's just we put together different technologies using different species for the cattle in vitro and reproduction system. So very briefly, genotyping is based in the technology of single nucleotide polymorphisms. Here you have a strand of DNA from one individual. Here there is a strand of DNA of another individual. And you can see that there is a single nucleotide difference in that chain. And scientists have been able to look at these changes and then relay them to specific traits that we're looking for. So all of these traits are recognized by the American Angus Association, calving ease, growth, daily gain, and so forth. So we need a piece of tissue to get this DNA. Then we do the SNP analysis. And then always remember that there is going to be a sample population, and I'm going to come back to this because the sample population, not all the time, is being raised or managed in the same environmental conditions where your cattle are. Okay? And this technology has been very useful, especially for these youngsters, because you take a sample of them, you send it for the analysis. Then you generate the APDs. The APDs are going to come from the father and mom. And this genomic information is going to increase the reliability of that EPD. Okay. In vitro embryo production, I call it the IVF revolution. In the last 10 years, this area in the United States has grown tremendously. I was able to find a source from ITS 2014. They said 500,000 embryos transfer. I think the number is very conservative. Many, many more embryos are transferred every year in the United States, and there is reasons for that. One of them, I think, is the high industry demand, and that has to do with these high genomic animals that have been identified, and then you want to replicate them. And as Paulo mentioned, this is the fastest way to do it. Also, the consistency of the IVF systems have improved, and I'm going to show you an example of that. And finally, there is multiple service providers nowadays. There has been significant investments from Bullstots into IVF companies. There is labs opening everywhere in the United States, large and small. It seems that everybody wants a piece of this IVF party. Our practice is mostly oriented to very close relationship with the customers and the animals. Okay, so the in vitro production system, very simple. We have a stimulated ovary. You can see the needle going into the follicle to aspirate the oocyte. These oocytes are going to be mature for one day. Then we need to co-incubate these oocytes that we obtain with semen. The semen is processed to a density gradient to separate the seminal plasma and I think food coloring or whatever else they add nowadays to semen. And we want to look for this rich population of sperm. We put them together. They go into culture, the incubator for 6 or 7 days, depending on the applications, and we get embryos. And these are nice-looking embryos that have the potential to produce a calf. Problem is that we don't know which embryo has the genomic information or has the highest potential to produce the calf that we want. So this is the driving force of the work that we do. So this is an example of the in vitro production efficiency. We published this this year. There is around 100 OPU sessions and close to 600 embryo transfers. And we can see that the cleavage rate, which is the rate of those oocytes that were fertilized and start dividing, is around 70%. The blastocyst rate with our best treatment is around 48%. The pregnancy rate is reaching 55%. But most importantly is the embryos transfer per session. We are averaging around 7.5 embryos. And then the pregnancies per session is around 4.5. And this type of data, you can find it in many other laboratories. So the system is getting more consistent. Now, we have the embryo, but now we need to take the sample. We need to take that cell sample to do the genomic analysis. So the very basic technique is the microblade dissection, which is simply a piece of metal, sharp metal, connected to a little rod, a plastic rod or glass rod. This was described a long time ago in 1970s, and I think I took this picture from George's class. Probably that picture was taken in the 80s. Okay, but nonetheless, still used. So in this particular study, actually was presented in this meeting last year, Gray and Roberts reported that they biopsy 3,000 embryos, but these are in vivo produced embryos, okay? For some, mostly for gender determination and some genetic mutations. Then, last year, the group of Quebec, Patrick Blondin and others, presented a work in where they genotype in vivo produced embryos, around 200 embryos, with pregnancy rates after freezing them of about 50%. But again, these are in vivo produced embryos, and they use this genotype to test many different ways to amplify that DNA. This is a picture of their paper, and you can see this is a blastocyst. Here is the inner cell mass that will form the calf. So you want to take a piece of this area, you cut the embryo, and this is the piece that they got. Now, when we try to do this in the lab with in vitro produced embryos, we manage to kill them all, okay? So we have to look for alternatives. What else can we do? So that brought us to a technique called the piezo-assisted drilling that has been described in the mouse for a long time, but actually John Ho at Texas A&M, he started doing this with equine embryos, and those samples were just for gender determination and simple genetic mutations in the horse, but it works. So what you need for this is a high-power microscope, a micromanipulator. These joysticks are connected with hydraulics, and then your rough movements are going to be very refined. And here is our piezo. So the piezo is nothing else than a jackhammer, but it's very precise that you can control, and it's simply going to make little holes, wherever you put it, and it's going to dislodge the cells so you can take a cell sample, okay? Here's a video of how that works. Here's a suction pipette. This is an early blastocyst, in vitro produced blastocyst. And you can see right now the piezo is vibrating, and you can see some cellular material going into the pipette. This is quite a long video, so I'm going to cut it a little bit. The blastocyst fluid is coming out, is draining. The needle came out, and you can see that we can get some cellular material. It's a very gentle technique. The hole is very small, and here you see the contents that we're interested in isolating the DNA. But this technique has problems, okay, that I will discuss in a bit. The next technique is being used in humans all the time, and it's called the laser-assisted drilling. So this is a day six morula, in vitro produced morula. And what we do is we're going to use the laser. Here, this dot is where the laser is going to fire, and these rings is a temperature gradient that is going to indicate you the how hot it's going to get. So obviously, you want to keep these rings as far away from the embryo mass. So as you can see, on day six you come, and then you make these holes. This is also called assisted hatching. In this particular embryo, the student fired three times. So that was one. That is two. And I think there's one more fire. But anyway, you come next day, and this is what you see. The trophoblast cells from the embryo, these are blastocysts already, they just herniate. They just come out without doing anything. And then you just get a bigger pipette and recover that cellular material. You can see the pipette now trying to suction some of those cells. And as you can see, that's a big chunk of embryo. And I calculate that's probably 30% of the trophoblast layer, and then you can help yourself with the laser to separate the mass if they're attached with these cellular strings. Okay, so you may think you will kill them, but then you come next day. This is the same embryo. Same embryo is hatching. You can see a very nice inner cell mass, and it looks relatively normal. Okay, so what are the challenges that we have? We get this piece of embryo, right? And it's a small DNA sample, so one cell has approximately 6 picograms of DNA mass. That's very little amounts. The platform that we're going to use for the SNP analysis requires 300 nanograms. So this is not enough. Even if you put the whole embryo in there, it's not going to work, right? So we need to amplify the DNA, and there is going to be two problems associated with that. One is called allelic dropout. Basically, one of the alleles in any particular part of the DNA, it doesn't get amplified, and then your reading is incorrect. Or a low call rate. This is how they evaluate the success of the test. And the call rate is simply the correctly identified SNPs over the total number of SNPs of the data set. Okay? And this number has to be over 0.9 or 0.85. There is a discrepancy there on depending on who you read. And if you have lower than that, you need to do something called genomic imputation. You just fill up the blanks of those SNPs that are missing from the information from the father and the mother, right? Or a very close population. But so these are technical challenges. Now, the whole genomic amplification means we're going to get the DNA and amplify it to the level of nanograms, so the test is reliable. It needs to be extremely accurate, no sequence bias, and it has to be applicable to a wide array of genomic platforms. Now, the platforms that are there are PCR-based and non-PCR-based. The PCR-based, they cut the DNA in pieces, and that creates more errors. There is a non-PCR-based technique, which is sold by QIAGEN, the multiple displacement amplification, and that's what we use for our experiments. Okay, you got the whole genomic amplification. Now you need to freeze that embryo, okay, because the results won't be back till a couple of weeks. So with car preservation of in vitro produced embryos, you're going to get in trouble because these embryos are good, but they are not normal. So they tend to have a high lipid content. The metabolism of these embryos is screwed up. Therefore, they have a lot of lipids, and that is going to interfere with when we freeze them. So there is loss of membrane fluidity, lipid peroxidation, a lot of reactive oxygen species, osmotic shock, and so forth. Now, people have come along and tried to trick the system and say, okay, well, don't we change the culture medias and add these compounds like carnitine, proscaline, PES, and let's try to reduce the lipid content of the embryo. So that has been one approach, and in some labs, that has worked okay. The other one is a method of cryopreservation that is going to help cryopreserve these embryos successfully. So there's two techniques. One is the slow freezing. That was based in work done in 1992 in ethylene glycol as a cryoprotectant for direct transfer. Direct transfer means you get the embryo out of the tank and you transfer. This is the standard of the industry. That's what practitioners want to use. But there is a possibility of ice crystal formation on that. The other one is vitrification, which is a physical state similar to glass. It has theoretical advantages because there is no ice crystals forming. But the problem is that you have huge number of formulations and recipes, and they are not user-friendly because you need to warm that embryo, put it in a microscope, do several steps, and it may take maybe 10 to 15 minutes per embryo. And when you have 20 to 50 embryos to transfer, you need to hire a technician to do the work for you. So that has some problems. Another approach has been, what about if we collapse that blastocele fluid prior to cryopreservation, get that fluid out, maybe the cryoprotectant can get in there and the equilibration with the cell is better. That was described first by John Ho in the horse, again, embryos that are over 250 microns in the horse, when you cryopreserve them, they tend to die. But when you do that, they survive. And also in the cow, in 2014, that procedure was reported in vitro produced embryos. Okay, so let's go to the experiments. In experiment one, we evaluated the in vitro production embryo survival rates after cryopreservation, so IVP embryos. So we did a 2x3 factorial design, grade 1 blastocyst, and these were from the slaughterhouse. And then we had two treatments, collapsed blastocyst or intact blastocyst. And we decided to use three different cryopreservation methods. We use a slow freezing with glycerol, which is also a stepwise rehydration of the embryo. We use a vitrification method called the cryotop. This is a picture of it. You put the embryo right here in the tip. You need to have a good embryologist to do this. They're expensive. They are used in human embryology. Or our open pool straws with basically by capillary action, the embryo gets into here and then you plunge it into liquid nitrogen. So the results for this experiment, have a quick video of how you can drain the blastocele. Okay, it's not working. But the needle goes into the embryo and this collapse, and that's how the embryo is going to look afterwards. It just shrunk. Okay? So all the fluid is going to disappear from that blastocele cavity, or most of the fluid. So the results for experiment one, the main effect of re-expansion between the treatments after cryopreservation and warming, the main effect of collapsing the blastocele is superior, so the re-expansion rate was higher than leaving the blastocele intact. So it seems to be working in our system. And the method of cryopreservation, the cryotop was superior than the slow freezing glycerol and was superior than the open pool straw. So that was the beginnings of our experiments. And then from here, we move on into the next one, which was, let's do the same thing, the 2x3 factorial design, grade 1, blastocysts from the slaughterhouse. We have intact embryos or piezo-assisted drilling embryos, right? Remember the ones that we put the needle and jackhammer them and see what happens. But this time we use two methods of slow freezing with glycerol or ethylene glycol for direct transfer, and the open pool straw. We drop the cryotop, even though it's a very good technique, it's just simply expensive and challenging to work with. And the results for this, again, almost identical as the previous experiment, the main effect of re-expansion of the two treatments after cryopreservation and warming was superior for those embryos that were biopsied, simply as a default, you are draining the blastocyst fluid compared to the control embryos. And then for the method of cryopreservation, the slow freezing ethylene glycol was 70% compared to the glycerol 86% and 85% for the OPS. But remember, these two are not user friendly. These two techniques are not user friendly. Okay, then we wanted to evaluate the cull rates of these biopsies. Okay, so we obtained blastocysts from OPU, from cows. We biopsy them with the piezo-assisted drilling or the laser-assisted drilling. Then we did whole genomic amplification using the QIAGEN kit, and then we send it for analysis in the Illumina 80K density chip. And then we look at culling rates. And the culling rates that we obtained for the piezo-assisted drilling were 0.79, and for the laser-assisted drilling was 0.94. This is unacceptable for analysis, and this number is very promising. Again, this is a small subsample of embryos, but usually when you send samples from skin, which is a lot of mass of DNA, and everything works fine, you know that the test is going to be reliable. So we're not confident about this yet, but I think it has potential. So finally, we did a field study, a small pilot study. We got OPU blastocyst. Our fresh control were 850 embryos transferred. And our experimental group was laser-assisted drilling biopsied frozen embryos in ethylene glycol for direct transfer, so the user-friendly version of cryopreservation. We did the embryo transfer, and these are the results that we obtained. The pregnancy rate at 32 to 38 days with ultrasound examination was around 55% for the fresh embryos and 42% for the biopsy frozen embryos in ethylene glycol. And you can see that there is a little bit more variation here, and it depends on the farm that we did this. So, in conclusion, the laser-assisted biopsy technique seems to be adequate. The cull rates over 0.9 seem sufficient for a robust SNP analysis. However, we need to look at the caps. We need to look at the caps, and that genotype needs to be very similar to the biopsy in order to corroborate the validity of this technique. And then cryopreservation in ethylene glycol for direct transfer results in 15% lower pregnancy rates than fresh embryos. So how we make progress? I think a bit. However, we need the information on what is the actual genetic gain and economic analysis to calculate the added value of trying to sell a genotype embryo. So going through all this circus, right, what is that value? We need that analysis. The good news is that the molecular biology field is a very progresses in a very fast pace, and these tests will become more sensitive and reliable. Now, caution. And the caution is the role of epigenetic effects, which means non-genetic effects, and their correlation with the phenotype and the individual performance. So remember, these SNP analyses are based on DNA, and the environment may change how the DNA is going to transcribe and translate, right? So, caution number two, this test may have a possibility of bias due to the genotype environmental interaction, okay? So perhaps, instead of these genomic evaluations perhaps needs to be customized to regions or specific cow families, because you're going to find variation in the correlation between the phenotype and the genotype. In other words, you may have a cow that has hundreds and hundreds of daughters, and all of them produce high milk production, and then you test that cow, and she comes negative for milk production in the genomic test, right? Because the sample population for that specific test was probably done in the East Coast and not here in California. So I think we should be looking at RNA sequencing. I think this is coming down the line, and this is going to alleviate some of the variation that we are going to obtain with genomic analysis. So with that, I would like to acknowledge all the students in the lab and the Dr. Golden, Marcelo, and Altermat for their help with these projects. Thank you very much.